It's time for another edition of Dome and Domer, the only podcast for Notre Dame fans by Notre Dame fans. If you're looking for cogent analysis and unbiased opinions backed by careful reporting, you've come to the wrong place. For the next 20 minutes or so, you'll get a fan's perspective on the Fighting Irish without all the normal spin from the so-called professional analysts. It's Dome and Domer. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer. My name is Mike Brammer. Joining me, Ed Jordanic, as we begin to unravel what, I'm sure if Coffee was doing the show, he couldn't do the show tonight. He would say the glass is half empty. For good reason. I mean, I'm ecstatic that we had the win, especially in the second half. But by the same token, I saw some things that I'm kind of scratching my head over, and I'm a little nervous about Saturday night going up to Spartan Stadium. I'll just point them out, two of them, to you and see if you saw the same thing. There were two things that really were like, oh, God, this is not good. One was, and it could have been an off day, but Brandon Wimbush just missed some open receivers. And he missed them from the standpoint that he had time in the pocket to throw. Nobody was in his face. It just was simply a matter of stepping up, setting your feet, and making a good throw, and he just didn't do it. Now, he sure as heck made up for it with his feet, and I do think that what he showed us is what I've always thought. He is electric with the football, and he can juke guys. He can make guys miss in the open field, and he certainly did it on two of the runs that he had. The other thing that really bothered me is a couple of the replays, you could see that our wide receivers were rounding off their cuts. And that's a major problem. That doesn't do any good for Brandon, because that just allows the DB to close a lot easier when you're not making sharp cuts. And I saw it more than once. And that's got me concerned, because that's fundamentals. That's just not repetitively going after the same drill of running a down and out the right way. You just cannot round that off. It's not good. And to me, those were the two biggest, but I'm sure there was a couple others, and maybe you have some different
yeah
views.
No, I think there's a lot of things that are, you know, troublesome in the passing game right now, in no particular order. I mean, Wimbush is getting hit a lot, and I think that quarterbacks tend to sag, especially young quarterbacks, and sometimes their throws are a little off when they're taking a punishment, when they're getting knocked around quite a bit during the course of a game. I remember a number of quarterbacks who would kind of struggle sometimes with their mechanics, or struggle to make good throws if they were constantly, you know, being hit, or spend a lot of time running around. There's been a lot of drops. I think, like you said, I didn't notice the route running as much, but obviously they're not getting separation, and they're dropping passes too. I think thirdly, I'm not quite sure the glass half full is that I think, you got guys like Alize Mack, who needs to get a little bit of confidence, and now he's caught some balls, and after dropping one against Georgia that was pretty big. So that's good. Get him, he's gonna knock some guys over, and he's gonna make some plays because he's such a good athlete. So getting him the ball, I think, is positive. And I don't necessarily, I'd rather see them. Looks like Tony Jones is gonna be hurt for a while. Throwing the ball to Josh Adams out of the backfield, I don't like him being our second leading rusher. I mean, our second leading receiver. I don't think we have a long term issue in terms of, there are some guys that just never end up being able to throw the ball very well. I don't think that's going to be the case with Brandon Wimbush. I think there's other issues, timing, coordination with receivers, maybe a little bit of the play calling. Just relaxing a little bit. So I think he'll be okay. I think he has the ability to be a good passer and to make good throws. But I think, we can't have it all at once, and to tell you the truth, I'd rather build from a base of being able to run the ball and let the passing game, like last year, it's like, we can't freaking run the ball. This year it's like, we can't freaking pass the ball. Well, I mean, how many, I want to see, nobody's going to figure this out because it would take some crazy research. But I want to know how many teams in history have had over 600 yards of total offense and punted the ball seven times and had two turnovers. And I think, didn't we turn the ball over on downs once? I mean, that's like 10 possessions that ended in punt or turnover or change of possession. And we had over 600 yards. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know how that happens.
Well, I mean, obviously the breakaways.
Sure,
but just to pile on some other things that I saw, because
we didn't tackle very well.
I saw
we
the
didn't
same
tackle
thing.
Very well. On, if you want to switch to defense,
no, yeah, we had a bad game, but I think that was a kind of a bad game. It'll be interesting to see if we tighten that up in the next game. The other thing that shocked me a little bit is for some reason we're still missing assignments where guys are coming free. You know, where guys are just completely unblocked. And I got to believe it's missed assignments. It can't possibly be that, well, we're gambling that guy's not going to rush us. Because a lot of times it's the down lineman. And it just doesn't make any sense. So some of that I think is just, you know, us, you know, getting into the familiarity with the offense and all that. And you're going to make some mistakes like that. But obviously that's a big problem. I do agree. There were some drop balls. There's some plays that guys just got to make as receivers. I mean, you just have to make certain tough catches, at least a couple.
Yeah.
And it just didn't seem like we made any tough catches on Saturday.
We're kind of focusing on the negative. I mean, because we obviously want to be a better balanced football team.
Yeah, we want to be a dominating
right.
football team.
But I think the positives are, you know, we had three takeaways. You know, that was really that's really been a bad part of our defense for the last several years. You know, certainly under Van Gorder, we just didn't take the ball away very much. And you know, you've got a kid like Sean Crawford that we've heard about for a long time, and to see him sort of gain some confidence and get some fun. I mean, Tavon Coney, you know, great game. You know,
He played well.
So, and you know, we had a freshman defensive tackle who basically jammed up what arguably was the turning point of the game. You know, a fourth and short that they jammed up, and he was the one that got the penetration and sort of slowed the play down so that our linebackers who all played well could finish it off. So, I have to admit, I think we got a little bit of help from BC in this game too. I mean, if I'm a BC fan, I'm like sitting on the ball with a minute left before halftime. And then
they got booed going off the stage.
That's unbelievable. I mean, I don't care. You know, you're playing Notre Dame. You know, you're playing arguably you're not going to win a game for the next month. And here you are against a decent opponent, a rivalry so-called. And, you know, and then the other thing is that, which just totally blew my mind, all week long I'm reading about this guy with 16 and a half sacks last year. Landry, I guess is his name. And they're playing him every other series, or they're taking him in and taking him out. I mean, what are you doing with your All-American?
And
you know, like, I don't understand. I just don't. I mean, if he's good, if he's an All-American, well, then he's good against he's a good edge rusher, and he's pretty stout against the run. I mean, you can't be an All-American if you just get blown away every time there's a running play. Then you're really just a specialist. You're no better than freaking Colin Hill or whatever that guy was who got a sack against Michigan as a freshman. I mean, you know, I don't know. I just don't I don't understand the mentality of having, you know, supposedly you're the best player on your football team, you know, playing every other series or whatever they were doing.
Yeah.
But he was invisible.
Yeah.
I mean,
if
part of our game plan was, you know, neutralizing him by either running right at him or a couple times, though, I was like shouting at the TV. Because we had a running back in the backfield, and Wimbush switches him to the other side of himself, away from the side that Landry was on. In other words, you know, they line up, and Tony Jones Jr. is, you know, to Wimbush's right, and Landry is on the left side of their line. You know, so you think that okay, they've got the back in there to sort of double team him, and then he switches over to the other side. I don't know.
But in those cases, it looked like he would roll to that side, which means that Landry's got to cover a lot of ground to get to him. Yeah,
so he's got
to
chase. So I'm sure they were aware of him. And, you know, hats
off to they definitely were aware of him. Hats off to them. And, you know, there's a lot of positives. I mean, they're clearly, I mean, obviously Wimbush and his running and what he showed. And granted, I mean, I think we all know what's going to happen Saturday night. I think Michigan State's going to make us throw the football. They're going to basically say, you're going to have to beat us by proving you can throw the football. So we know that's coming. And even in regards to that comment, I think Wimbush is that good of an athlete that he can still make guys miss. And, you know, everybody talks about, oh, you just put eight guys in the box and the game's over. No. If eight guys are in the box and you miss, there's nobody back there. Yeah, well, you know, you're talking about a big, huge run. Yeah. So I mean, it's going to be interesting.
If the games are any indication, I haven't charted it, but I think Notre Dame was, you know, three throws and out or two of three. You know, Notre Dame threw the ball in the first three games on their opening possession.
All three times.
So I think they're going to, you know, they're going to try and loosen things up by throwing the ball first. If that's what a team is going to do, and you're probably right, Michigan State's probably going to do that. The thing is that's what they tried to do against Boston College, but they were utterly inept throwing the ball. So it took them basically, you know, two and a half, three quarters to get rolling. When they did, it was, and again, they made, you know, they're good enough where, you know, they created some pretty massive holes for Josh Adams in the first half. That was enough to give them a lead. And then in the second half, Wimbush, a couple of those, he just kind of, they were all him. You know, the blocking wasn't particularly brilliant. It was just, he made pretty great individual plays. So, it was nice to see him really, you know, bully BC in the fourth quarter. That was not unenjoyable.
Yeah, it was. it was. And I mean, it was nice to do. To be honest with you, going into halftime, I was pretty nervous. I mean, I could have seen that going either way. I thought, you know, for whatever reason, we just couldn't seem to get the mojo going. And I was thinking to myself, oh my God, if we come out flat on that first series,
which we did,
anything can happen. I mean, anything. And so it was nice to see us rebound and kind of do, you know, break away and ultimately do what we all hoped would happen. And that is, you know, beat them comfortably.
Well, I credit, you know, this is what something that we were talking about last week that in a strange way is sort of connected to the grief that Brian Kelly got for the way he answered the reporter's question. There was no sign of a team that couldn't close on this past Saturday. There was no sign of, you know, again, we're talking about, you know, well into the third quarter, right? That they're, and their first two possessions of the second half, remember, they deferred, they got the ball three and out, and then they had a turnover, right, on their next possession. So, you know, you're kind of staring down the barrel of a embarrassing program blowing up type defeat, and then you hang 35 on them in the second half after the first two possessions of the half yield nothing. So I think that's why coaches get crazed about program questions like that, because they just don't deal, they don't really deal in the world of carryover from season to season, year to year. They look at it as completely clean slates. Obviously, in this case, Notre Dame had to take a clean slate. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I think there's a little bit of a connection between those two things there. And credit the coaching staff for not, you know, sort of playing scared or growing, you know, or blowing a gasket when it was 14-13. Well into the third quarter, they just kept, and they had some help, obviously, but they did what they needed to do, and then and they didn't get
nervous. I think you're right. I think
they certainly weren't
course.
As nervous as
That's
we
right.
were, or if they were, they didn't show it.
Right? Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, I was definitely sweating bullets. But I will say that, you know, a lot of positives did come out of that. And there are some things that you know, can propel us forward. Least of which was then turning the television on later at night and seeing a couple teams struggle. Stanford ended up losing, USC ended up pulling it out. But, you know, and unfortunately, the world we live in, that's not exactly a good thing.
No, you're right.
It's unfortunate. You really needed those guys to just pound everybody until they got to us, and then we win. But, you know, college football is college football, and who knows? I mean, it's so early at this moment. The key now is, does Notre Dame pick up on the things that made the glass half full versus half empty? And I think if they can – I do agree with you 100%. I think Brandon Wimbush – you know, look, if you talk to the Notre Dame staff – when they recruited him, it wasn't because of the way he ran the football.
Right.
They recruited him as a passer.
Sure.
They thought, you know what, this guy can throw the football. He's got a great talent. And I just think it's what, he had one of those off days. It just wasn't there. And maybe he was pressing it too much. But you're right. When guys drop some passes from a confidence level thing, it does. It wears on you. You're like, oh my God, what do I got to do?
I'm kind of getting the vibe that, you know, EQ has been reading his, you know, first round draft pick clippings a little bit. I mean,
he's been
flat out has not been impressive so far. Certainly has not come out this season and sort of grabbed the bull by the horns the way that Will Fuller did as a senior, for example, or the way that Michael Floyd did as a senior. You know, in other words, kind of saying like, I'm the alpha dog, I'm the best receiver on the field, and I own these deep backs. You know, you just don't get that feeling. You get a sort of a tentativeness, you get sort of a little bit of an attitude, and maybe that's really going overboard reading the body language. But, you read a lot about him and his brothers and his family, and you just wonder, you know, I hope his dad's getting on his case about how he's played the last 3 weeks, as opposed to thinking that it's the coach's fault or Wimbush's fault or the, you know, a lot of times, you know, these receivers and are prima donnas to begin with. And then if you've got, other people whispering in your ear that it's the quarterback's fault, that's not a good combination. If you step up and take accountability and work to get better, hey, then I'm all over you. But sometimes, you know, you get a little bit too much. We've seen receivers who immediately start pointing fingers when they're dropping balls and rounding off routes like you're talking about.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens Saturday night, because if Notre Dame can correct some of these things, then it should be an incredibly competitive football game with us probably having a slight edge at the end. I was going to mention, I don't even know what the line is, and that just now reminded me that we got called out for fake news on the show that I did that you and Coffee skipped. Somebody passed on to me that Notre Dame was a three touchdown underdog. That then the Vegas line changed.
To Georgia?
That we were actually an underdog by three touchdowns. And, you know, I don't pay any attention to Vegas, so I was like, man, those guys are idiots. It doesn't surprise me. So, in any event, I did get called out by one of our fans on the site.
I think Notre Dame is at least here early in the week, Notre Dame's a 3 or 4 point favorite at East Lansing.
Okay.
I know that it kind of seems like that they're quote unquote, the matchup is not, you know, that their defensive weaknesses are they don't really have edge rushers, due to the police blotter, and you know, they have got a young secondary, a talented secondary, but kind of a young secondary. So and you know, we know how they're going to play. They're going to press, and you know, hopefully we'll get calls, like, you know, if they play the way that Michigan State usually plays pass defense. But you would think that if you kind of come out and make a couple plays in the passing game to loosen things up a little bit, that, you know, at least enough to keep them honest and at least enough to show that you can do it, then I think the offense could have a pretty good night.
Yeah, that's right.
But if you're incompetent, but you know, if you're inept passing the ball, they're always going to have good tacklers, going to have good linebackers. So.
Yep. And they're going to come after us. It'll be man-to-man coverage. And that's where, you know, Equanimeous needs to stand up and make a couple big plays. I mean, we need him, and he needs to deliver Saturday night, because if we aren't getting some of that for Brandon, then we're going to be in trouble. And I just think that it's going to be a one-dimensional throw it if you can beat us, but you are going to throw the football. And if we struggle, look out, because I just don't.
Yeah. Here's my other theory that
I don't think Michigan State's too smart. D'Antonio is too smart of a coach. He's been there, done that. He's going to go with what's going to give him a chance for success. And that you just know what's coming.
And, you know, you harken back to the day Notre Dame is always – not always, but they've laid a lot of eggs at night in East Lansing. They've had some good a couple good performances. I think 2006 was a great comeback, but they've also had some real turkeys. So it's a tough place to play, and you know, they're trying to gain some respectability back after an awful year like we were. They're probably not quite sure who they are yet, in the same way that we don't. But I will say that we've got a chance to just take another step. And like we said last week, you know, kind of the only sign of success is if Notre Dame figures out a way to win every game between here and USC. And this is another, you know, decent quality opponent, you know, go on the road. They've got some talent, and they've got to go and figure out a way to win the football game and grow a little bit and just grow each week into understanding who they are and what they're capable of.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I do think that they took that step with Boston College.
Eventually
some things
they
were exposed. Yep. And they did. And you know, some things were exposed. Okay, well, then that's what you got to fix. I mean, you now know what you're dealing with, and these are the things you got to fix. And it'll be interesting to see if we do make those adjustments and improve upon them, because that marketed, you know, being able to improve from week to week is what gets you to the point of USC where you have a chance. You got 2 weeks to prepare for them. So it gives you an opportunity to really hone in on the things that need that fine tuning. You enter in a couple wrinkles here and there, and then anything can happen. I mean, if we get the confidence level going and head into that game with that confidence, anything can happen. But you got to be able to go to East Lansing and win, and that's not an easy thing. You just can't say, "Ah, we're a 3-point favorite. We should win the game." It just doesn't work that way.
Definitely not.
So. Yeah, and hopefully, you know, Brandon will have the kind of game that he needs to have to get his confidence back and moving, because I'm sure all he's going to hear this entire week is, "Oh my God, we got a huge problem on the passing game," and so now he's got to be able to deal with that and kind of put it behind him and just blot that stuff out.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the other thing is, in a strange way, some of these, you know, receiver injuries and, you know, stealth suspensions or whatever, you know, may help a little bit, because they're narrowing down the field, you know. With Canteen out and, you know, Tony Jones Jr., who's kind of a receiving back, and Cam Smith, you know, sort of hurt, you know, it looks like, you know, it's the, you know, hopefully we'll see a little bit of Claypool, a little bit of Fink, maybe a little bit of C.J. Sanders, you know. But it sounds like that, you know, between, you know, EQ, Claypool, and maybe even Michael Young, a freshman, you know, somebody's got to emerge from this pack. I mean, I'm much more comfortable with kind of, you know, a 4-receiver rotation than a 7-receiver rotation.
Right. I agree. Yeah, I think you're right about that. Just gets you a little bit better chance to get, you know, acclimated with the game and the flow of it, and just guys getting more and more comfortable. It's tough to do 7. I think it's
tough on Wimbush when you're just kind of got guys coming in and out all the time, and you're just you kind of are having to process their tendencies and sort of their length.
Well, and especially the matchups. I mean, a lot of times it's as simple as looking at the matchup. Okay, I got Claypool on so-and-so. He couldn't hold him last time.
Right.
I know what's likely going to be wide open, you know.
Right. So, I think one last thing, I think special teams has to clean up a little bit too. You know, you can't be kicking the ball out of bounds.
Yeah.
You know, they had a couple, you know, we get no return yardage really to speak of yet this year. I think we can do a little bit better job on that. And it just seems to me that every time we punt the ball, there's some space there for the return man to maneuver. And every time they punt the ball, you know, the guy, their gunner is basically catching the ball in front of Fink. I mean, it doesn't seem like that we really give him any room to operate at all. And maybe we've just, you know, played some very good punters with terrific hang time, but it just seems like it's kind of one-sided in terms of the punt return game and who's getting the better of it. So,
yeah, I hear you. I've noticed the same thing. All right, good deal. Well, we'll leave it there. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanic, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.